Hello and welcome to another English edition of my podcast Helium Talk, das Kunstgespräch. My name is Jörg Heikhaus and my guest in this episode is Peter Skovgaard. Peter is one of the most renowned abstract painters in Denmark, and we talk about his process that is inspiringly spontaneous and resulted in an incredibly huge body of work over the many years Peter is working as an artist. Born in 1960, he has a deep understanding of what it means to live your life as a painter and also to live off it. There's a lot of experience in his words and his stories, and I personally find it really enlightening what Peter has to say to a younger generation of artists. Peter Skovgaard has shown his work internationally and had acclaimed exhibitions not only in his home country. He also painted for massive institutional but also commercial projects in the past, and for example had the privilege of meeting the Queen of Denmark on one of these occasions. I had the pleasure of talking to him before the opening of his show Face of Fate at the Helium Cowboy Gallery in Hamburg. Happy listening, and as always, I'm looking forward to your feedback by mail at heliumtalk@heliumcowboy.com or any of the other channels where you can reach out to us. Just wanted to say again that it is very important for me to hear what you guys think, so I can improve Helium Talk along the way.
Helium Talk. Helium
Talk. Even if it's very abstract things, I think you can always find something, because I'm putting some perspective in the work. I want to see very deep in behind the colors, behind the formation I work with. And if you build that up, I think it will happen that you can find something. I mean, from 15 years ago, the Queen of Denmark was opening one of my big things I have done in a university. And she is very glad of small dogs. And she came to me and said, I can find 7 dogs in your painting.
All right.
And I have never thought about dogs in that big thing. It was 10 by 20 meters.
All right, okay.
So,
so it was one large painting that you presented?
It was one large painting, and our queen could see a lot of dogs. Other people can see something different. And I can see something every time I'm painting. I don't know what it is, but I can see something coming through. And I think it's a very important thing for me that I'm telling a story. I'm telling a story which you can use personally. You can try to find your own story, because there should be substance enough in every painting. And I think it's very, very important for me that it's not one story, it's not one simple thing, it's a subtitle and a complex thing. And if you can do that in an abstract painting, I think you have done what you can do for making abstract painting.
So let me get back to the Queen. So you have quite a name in Denmark. And when you said the Queen opened this special event where this painting was of yours, is that something that happened often in your career? I mean.
Yeah, I have been making some big things, you know, decoration, I think we can call it, when big schools, companies, hotels, I'm very glad of the big scale.
Okay.
And I can't.
You're not scared of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of artists.
Which, so what's big? I mean, like 10 by 20 meters?
Or yeah, sometimes it's even bigger. I have been making in a hotel, a big hotel, huge hotel in the middle of August. I've been painting on glass. It is 42 meters by 3.5 meters.
Wow.
It's going into the hotel, out of the hotel, into the garage, into the public place, And there's LED light behind, and it changed the whole way. Okay. When you're walking around it, you can never find the same painting because the lights are changing, and all the abstract things I've done with eyes, with the faces, mm-hmm. are changing the whole time.
And is that then painted on the walls directly, or
no? It's painting on the back of glass.
Ah, okay,
behind and glass. And then yeah, we put light back again. Behind the opal plexi.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna check that out. Where is it? Which hotel? Where is it?
It's called Aarhus Tower.
Okay.
And it's some big companies, and the Comwell Hotel is in there too. Okay. It's a very, very large.
So you're living in Aarhus, and Aarhus is actually a very interesting city in Denmark regarding arts. You know, you have a very, very prolific art museum, contemporary art museum.
It is, and Aarhus is coming very up in these times for culture, for art, and I think it's going to be a little bit more like Copenhagen and Jutland is.
Okay.
It's really going to have a scene like mm-hmm. Copenhagen now. But I'm also working in Berlin now. I've been working in.
Sure, no, it's just like, because I mean, if you're doing this and this is an art, I mean, this the thing for me is that what I like about Denmark and art in Denmark is there's a very big understanding in society for the importance of art.
Yeah.
So you see much more public art than you probably see here. You see much more public support for it. And there's like, we have few hotels that employ artists or give artists maybe a room or a little project.
Yeah.
But it's not as widespread as it is in Denmark.
I think. And in fact, it's really a shame because you have so many new buildings. Yeah. You are rebuilding old buildings, and
totally agree. Yeah,
yeah. And big companies do have a lot of money, and in fact, in the budget of a big company is quite a little amount for doing something very, very good for the people working there and mm-hmm. the people visiting the building.
Yeah.
So I think it might be an idea to change that mind in Germany.
I've over the years I've had a few clients, still have one or two that actually have when they move into a new office or rebuild an office, they give every employee a certain amount of budget to buy art.
Yeah.
In order to make sure it's not the photo of the famous photo of the kiss in France as a poster on aluminium debond. They say these are the sources where you can buy it.
Yeah.
So go to Helium Cowboy, go to this gallery, check this out. Here's a portfolio you can pick from those works in that price range.
Yeah.
None of the directors of these companies or owners of the companies who actually do that are German.
No.
None of them is German. So these clients, they are international clients. Yeah. They have international companies. They have companies here in Hamburg.
Yeah.
But they're not Germans.
No.
So I think I'm not saying that it's not happening in Germany. I'm pretty sure there are companies out there in Germany who do that too.
Yeah.
But you know, even when I've worked I've been asked to work for Facebook as a new office just around the corner, and they have also art in their offices.
Yeah.
But these art that they have in their offices has to follow so many guidelines that it's hard to put an artist to that.
Yeah.
So that is really just pure decoration in the end that comes there. And then it's always the question who makes the decision. And in companies that are as large and hierarchical as Facebook, for example, the decision is not made in Hamburg.
No.
You know, things like that. And I think that's something that should definitely change, because that's one thing that we need for the art market, especially when sales are declining like in the past years. It would be time for companies to pick up on that, you know. But you have this understanding in Denmark it's much more natural, I think.
It's much more natural. And if you are building something, you are, even if the state do have money in it, or mm-hmm. if it is the state who are building, you need to use at minimum 5% of the total cost.
Okay.
To art, it's a law in Denmark.
Yeah.
So in that way, it could be an inspiration in Germany to have that type of idea.
We just have to make sure the right people listen to the podcast.
Yeah.
And,
But also private companies do spend a lot of money because, you know, sometimes you need to be the first mover. Mm-hmm. And I think if here in Hamburg, one of the big companies do that and get some, you know, get into the newspapers and the right people are talking about it, it would give a good effect to other companies, yeah, to do that. And in fact, for a little amount, you can get a very, very huge impression for your, sure, employees and for people visiting your company.
Most of the art is affordable.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, if you just look at the, you know, sort of as volume, the biggest volume of art is very, yeah, affordable.
Yeah.
You get a lot of art for little money. It's, yeah, of course, if you want to have the Damien Hirst in your hotel, then, yeah, of course, then you have to,
yeah,
have to put a little bigger budget to that. But if you if you just want really good art by, yeah, you know, sort of strong artists, yeah, then it should be easy to find.
Yeah. But I think it could be very easy for the companies to ask the right people. You don't need to have Damon Hirst or art like that, because you can always see Damon Hirst around, but it could be an idea to find good artists, professional artists, and, yeah, make them a good deal and sure, and help the artist to be a known person in the area,
yeah,
on the good way. And it is not a lot of money. It's a low cost, in fact. Maybe it could be an idea to start a little conference about why are we not using some of all our money in the companies for doing something good, like art.
Yeah, I'm totally up for it. Okay, so that's one nice topic that I hope many people listen to and will, you know, take into account when they, yeah, redo their offices or stuff like that. Getting back to you and to your work, have you always been an abstract artist? Was that clear for you from the beginning?
Yeah, I think so. My uncle is still an artist living on Bornholm in Denmark, a little island. Mm-hmm. And when I was 14, I was living at his place in 1 year. And I started making art. I have always, like other children, mm-hmm, done a lot of drawings and stuff like that. And I have always continuing. The only break I had, and it was not a break, I was studying philosophy at the University of Aarhus, okay, in 5 years, because my grandfather, he's a psychology, and he said it's very difficult to make a living of art. And I said, yes, maybe. So I think you should have an education. You should go to the university.
Okay.
And I start studying philosophy, which are even more worse to have a living of.
It's worse. Yeah. Yeah. And when was that?
In the late 80s.
Okay. Yeah. But I mean, for me personally, it doesn't matter if you've gone to an art school or anything else. Things, it's just you have to make your way through life and have to, you know, learn something and broaden your mind the older you get.
My idea about art school is that it's not making artists. If you're not an artist before you come to the school, you're not ending up like an artist. You have it in your person, mm-hmm, in your genes. I don't know how to explain that. It doesn't matter. But you know if you're an artist, and if you can continuing making art and insist of making that, mm-hmm, in many years, it will tell me that something is right. And it's maybe therefore you're continuing making something nobody can use, in fact.
It's
useless. But you insist to continuing making abstract paintings or what you are making. And that feeling and that way to have a live is only for art people. some people are trying to be an artist, and they are trying in 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years, and they are giving up because it is not the inner thing in the person. It's not a part of the personality. It's not a part of the mindset, the feelings. So for me, it's only possible to be an artist if you are an artist. You can try many schools. You can try to be assistants for famous painters or artists, but it will never make an artist out of you if you're not have the quality inside you.
Yeah, I think it's you have to be driven to make your own art. And also you have to understand that there's no thing that you can plan about this. I mean, there's also in regards to your work. That's why I was asking whether it always has been abstract, because with many artists you see that they're changing over years.
Yeah.
And that is, I like that about artists as well, you know. And for me it's fine either way. I'm not judging any of that, but it's like I have if you have an artist that starts out with certain things that fit to his young life or the time that he's working in, and then you just continue and you see the changes in craft or also in technique and colors and stuff like that. You see life, art is always pretty close to a life cycle of a person, I think.
Yeah.
So probably with your work as well, that when you go back and you say, the first works that I did were all in colors that I'm not even using anymore.
Yeah.
You know.
Of course, I change colors, I change sizes, I change a lot, and I can see that when I'm looking back, I've been doing that in 35, 40 years, but I can see it's me, even if it's something different. I can see the way of the movements, the feelings, I think it's about how is it called, musicality in it. It's the same. Even when I was 18 years old, my first exhibition on a little cafe in the west coast of Denmark. There's no doubt about that was me who was making that.
Yeah, totally, I agree. I understand, yeah.
So in that way, I'm just following a road. I don't know where it ends, but until now, it's totally in the same direction. And I changed colors. I've been making 2 years ago in Oslo at a gallery up there, I made a exhibition only with black and white.
Yeah.
With Hammerlack.
Okay.
It's something, you know, industrial product, but I like it. And I was
painting. So like animal luck.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So I was doing that in a half year, making only black and white, and I love that.
Yeah. It's also a challenge for yourself, you know.
It's a challenge.
Yeah.
And then I'm working with wood, oak wood, plexiglass, and light, LED light, neon light, and so on. And that's more for the decoration in the big public companies.
For the public work.
Yeah.
So when your materials in this exhibition is mostly oil and on canvas, oil,
drawings,
black animal, and so on.
You
can still smell it in here when you come in here. Some of
you
the
can
work
smell
is
it,
still
yeah.
fresh.
I cannot smell it. It's many years ago.
Yeah, no, your taste is, you know, probably has, you know.
When people come to my studio, they say, oh, my God, it smells. Well, are you going to be crazy? Maybe, I don't know.
Or you maybe already are.
I am crazy. I don't know. I cannot smell it.
So your studio, you have a large studio where you work on several pieces at the same time, or you just have a focus on one work?
No, I'm working on several pieces in one time. I always done that. And I need a lot of space. Unfortunately, I fill up the space in few days.
But you have a large studio probably?
Yeah, I have 300 square meters. But for example, in Berlin, in Kreuzberg, I had 10 years ago, I rented a very big one, 500 square meters. And I loved to come in there the first week because it was clean, it was nice. I show the photos to my wife back in Denmark, and she said, "Oh, it's beautiful. Build it up in a proper way." And I said, "I will. I'll build a kitchen there, and there is for oil painting. Over there is for sculptures mm-hmm. and so on." And after 2 months, she came to visit me at the studio, and she said, "It's totally the same. It's totally chaos around you."
Yeah, I think that takes over, you know. Yeah.
Well, and it was 500 square meters filled up with everything.
Yeah, but I mean, that depends on how you work. I mean, personally, with my art, I'm pretty organized.
Yeah.
And I need, you know, sort of some certain, I need to know where everything is and stuff like that.
I know where everything is.
But then I have, yeah, same here. So I have the feeling everything's kind of, for me, sometimes I think for people, it looks like chaotic, but I know where everything is. But with me, it's not, people come not, are not coming and saying, "Oh, it's totally chaotic here." But they say, "Oh, it's so structured. It's so organized. It's so..." And then, you know, so often they say it's German, which in my eyes has nothing to do with where I come from. It's just like how I work.
Yeah.
But I think a studio is very important place for an artist to have your space. And it doesn't really matter how you fill it or if you fill it up. So that's one of my topics over these past...
Yeah.
Basically, over the whole time since I'm doing Helium Cowboy, my studio was always an issue, because first I opened my art studio and then I made the gallery inside the art studio. Yeah. So it was a mix. Then the gallery took over and they took my work wherever there was space, even at home again.
Yeah.
That's the worst art that I've done probably my whole life that happened in that time. It's not bad, but it's like, it's very conceptual. I always had to try to involve the space that I'm working in into the work I'm doing. So now here I basically went back on a much higher level though as when we started Helium Cowboy, bigger room, better space, more understanding, more knowledge. That now this gallery is a studio.
Yeah.
And the gallery in one room again. It's like in the beginnings.
Yeah, I like that.
But this is like an important place for me. But I don't have problem, for example, sharing this.
Right.
And I can only make exhibitions here, of course, with artists who don't mind that the studio is in here. Basically, from a marketing perspective, of course, it's good because people come here under the week and they also like, you know, sort of to see the work that's being created. But I understand that there are probably some artists that say, I want to show it there.
Yeah.
Did you ever have an environment that you, or is there any environment you don't like to show in? I mean,
no.
We talked about this.
No, you know, when you were very, very young and was very concerned about mm-hmm. your works and your career and so on, mm-hmm. it was a little bit, where am I going to put my art mm-hmm. and who is I'm going to have together?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And now I have the feeling that the art scene is changing.
Yeah.
The art scene is changing in another direction, where you're getting back, and I love that, you're getting back to the artist, you're getting back to the studio, and you take a little power away from the big, big white cube galleries, from the curators, from the investors, from the financial thing, because it was too much in a way some years ago in the zeros, we called it in Denmark, where everything grew and you know, every artist were a part of a stock holding market.
Okay.
And I think it took over mm-hmm. in that way, and in another way the curators were more important than the artist.
Mm-hmm.
And now I think at We're coming back. I can see in Berlin, you're putting paper works on the walls in small galleries, just with a little needle. It's not big framed, and you can show your studio on the internet, and you can have a directly dialogue mm-hmm. with people who are interested in your art. And in fact, I like it, and therefore I like a place like that. It's a new way. It's more complex, because there's more than just a white wall and a big painting
mm-hmm.
and a curator with a huge, huge book of academic things around your art.
Yeah.
Now you here you can see the art, you can smell the art, you can even sit here at a bar and look at the art.
Yeah.
And I like that feeling of mix up, because you're getting more close to the real thing. And I really think it's a changer, a game changer in the whole art scene now. We don't like that the art is a stock holding market piece,
mm-hmm.
and we don't like it is you talk about the art as an thing,
as an investment. Yeah, I have that often, that I've been, you know, sort of asked about the point of where art, you know, sort of if that is a good investment, and I think I'm a good salesman. Otherwise, I think this my world of being an artist and running a gallery professionally would have collided many years ago. You have to be. To make a gallery, you have to be a businessman,
of
some sort. So I have an understanding. But every time somebody comes to me and asks me, is that a good investment about the value of the work? I always say, no.
Right.
It cannot be a good investment if you're just asking this question for the first. I mean, we have some artists that we've built up over the years. If you bought like 10, 12 years from certain artists from us, these works are, the artist sell their new work at different prices, but that still doesn't mean that you can take the old painting you bought 10 years ago, put it on the market and say, can I, you know, so do I find a client? So there's not necessarily a big secondary market for everything.
Yeah, but that was the problem.
Yeah.
Before, I think 20, 25, 30 years ago, when the gallery really had success and was a big part of the big cities.
Mm-hmm.
Berlin was filled off of international galleries.
Yeah.
The problem was that if you are going into that gallery and the gallerist are telling a story about how much it's going to be worth in the future, you have lost totally the art.
Yeah. You're ignoring the artist and his art totally. Yeah,
I'm totally agree that it could be a good idea to have brought a cheap piece of art, and then you can earn some money 20 mm-hmm. years ago, 20 years in the future. It's okay for me. That's part of the game.
Course, yeah.
And a gallery is a commercial place, and you need to be a good businessman.
Mm-hmm.
That's a part of it. But it's not a part of it that you are telling a story which is not true.
Yeah.
If you like art, buy them. If you have the money, buy them. Buy it.
Yeah.
You cannot tell a story that if you buy that,
mm-hmm.
you will be rich in 10 years.
Yeah. So people, some people try to do that, but it's that's the uncertainty in art is when it comes around. I mean, when it comes around the financial aspect, I'm totally about this. I mean, you know, I like. I try to light the fire in people to buy art.
Yeah.
Because it's very important that artists make money. The only way they can continue to deliver is if they can pay their rent. And the more comfortable, for me and many artists, they when they're young and they don't make much money, and then they start maybe at some point building a family, they start to get panic.
Yeah.
Of course, because the money that they probably made before with two or three exhibitions and a few shows, it was okay when they had their cheap little studio they shared with five friends and their small flat they lived in, or their shared flat, and as soon as family comes in there. And I think that's an important aspect of my work, trying to build artists over the course of time that they have a career they can actually live from.
Yeah.
But that's super rare still, you know. I think that's a point. But I could not tell anyone of these people, not even the artists. I mean, you have artists that I sold work to really influential people.
Yeah.
That still doesn't mean that this artist has made it, you know. It has to continue, especially in times like today where everybody has sold a painting to a celebrity.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean shit, you know, in the end. Unless, of course, this person goes and says, okay, I'm going to support this person. I'm going to support this artist but not by just dragging him in front of in front of the camera all the time, but by investing in her art, in his or her development, and by helping to understand what the art is about.
Yeah, that's important. The most important thing for an artist is that you have a life, a whole life in art. It's not just some years of your whole life. It's the whole life in art.
There's no pension for us.
we need to continuing. And I think it's very important for people to know that the artists they are following from their young people, young artists to middle age and so on. They are the real artists and they are making a living, which are very important. And it's very important to follow them.
And
because it's their life, they have only that. You cannot change as an artist. You cannot change to another thing. It's very difficult. Maybe you could sit in a supermarket when you're young and have some more money for that and pay your rent. But if you're going to make a living of it, you are in a very, very tough business. And you are insisting on yourself every day you're working. You stay up of your bed, go to your studio. You insist on yourself. I'm continuing. Nobody buys in the moment, but I'm continuing. And that's an important thing for artists, because if they had that, they are real artists and they can continuing and they will make a living of it. Of course, it's good when you are working with good galleries, because a lot of artists are not good salesmen, but they need that part. And if you are in a good dialogue with a good gallery, you will always make it.
That's also an interesting aspect, the gallery part. I mean, in these... on one hand, yes, I agree. It's very good that artists can share through the internet what they're working on, what they're doing, get support in at least a visual way by people liking and commenting and taking part in their profession and maybe in their lives too. But also, I think that the role of the gallery has changed also in the understanding. I think a lot of young artists are not necessarily keen on having the one gallery that helps them build up, but they're switching. There's no loyalty, there's no commitment from both sides probably. When I started with Helium Cowboy, we had, and I took an artist that was young, that wasn't known. We did the first exhibition. I always said, don't expect anything from this first show.
No.
We're going to do another one in 2 years.
Yeah.
On the way there, we work together. I put you into group shows. I talk with people about it. I have some works here. But don't expect anything. No money, nothing. I'm doing this as an investment. You're doing this as an investment in the future. In 2 years' time, when we do the next exhibition, we can start to expect something. But with the third exhibition, like in 5 to 6 years, that's when we are serious. That's when we started. I mean, I'm not talking about mid-career, end-career artists. I'm talking about young artists, building them up. And I think nobody has time for that anymore. Everybody expects to have 20,000 followers tomorrow or in a few weeks and getting many galleries invited. And you know, we see many artists, also artists that we work with here at Helium Cowboy now, they have participated in a group show in the US, they participate in a group show here, they do here, they do here. They get a lot of attention for that. But there's not one person that's taking care of them as, you know, gallerists used to do. Like you're working with Wolfson for many years. Kent is doing that for you. Kent Wolfson. Now Rasmus is doing it for the artists. But I mean, it's also almost impossible as a gallery to work with artists that way, because when I'm working with an artist and say like in 2-3 years, that's you know, when we're gonna start know, sort of to sell, that's when we're gonna start find the interesting people, that's when we can get you into a bigger show, into in an institution, for example. Younger artists are like, it's so long, I don't know. And then you do that. Oh, in the beginning, they let's do that. And then like 2 years later, I want to show with this guy.
No patience.
There's no patience.
And the problem is that, you know, all the social media, the internet is changing the mindset of a lot of people because you are looking for the big success in your life in a wrong way. It's not possible to do what you think you can do. You have the possibility to talk to everybody through your computer. You can be everywhere. You can look at everything, but it's not making a good artist, and it's not making the right career. And I think you will see in these years some years in front of us that a lot of young artists are going back to be I'm working in my studio every day because I tried to be a success. I tried to be a rock star in the first 5 years. And I'm not a rock star. I'm still an artist. In fact, a little bit unknown artist. A lot of people know my name. But if your name is getting in front of your paintings, it's very bad. You need to have people looking at your painting and say, oh, is that the man? And not, oh, you are the artist. What kind of art are you making?
Yeah, okay.
It's the opposite way.
I understand, yeah.
And the social media in the whole world has changed that. And I think we are going back, as I told you before, I think as coming a turnaround back to the real thing. The real thing that is simple, you're an artist, you're working in your studio, you're hard working in your studio, and you're continuing, and you're insisting, working every day. Nobody asks you, but you cannot stop. It is a part of the artist living. Then you can build up some career through your galleries, contacts, and so on, but it's coming slowly, and you cannot jump over some possibilities, and you're not winning in the lotto. You need to work for that, and I really think there's a lot of young artists in these years will say, yes, I tried. I was a rock star. I thought I was a rock star, but now I need to go back to make a living.
Yeah. Also, I think it's. Personally, that's one of my biggest struggles as an artist. Because people look at what I'm doing, they say, "Well, you know, he started this thing 16 years ago. He's been doing art many years before that, but I've done a lot of things in my life." So basically, most people probably think he's made it. You know.
Yeah.
But when it comes to my art, that's my biggest struggle. Is I would just love to be away from people knowing me.
Yeah.
I would just love to work in my studio and then come out of the studio once a year. In regards to my artwork, of course, yes, I will come out of the studio and I want to live, you know, in the outside world. I just don't want to be, sort of a hermit somewhere.
We all
want. Just to work, create the work, have the discussion with people that I want to have the discussion with. Like, for example, appreciating other artists coming around, having a few beers, you know, looking at the art, talking to galleries like Rasmus or so, or my son or my family, friends that are close. But always having the pressure to kind of present something, because I think with me, what you just said, without actually really wanting that, you know, my name has moved these past years a little bit in front of my art, and I'm trying to revert that, but I'm kind of stuck in this conflict of showing things that I'm working on and where I'm working on. So for me, I found niches on the internet that nobody knows of me. I'm not showing anything private or personal, real personal, although my life is private in a way, sure, but I try to not show my work before it's actually somewhere on the wall, and it's the ones that you kind of need, you know, sort of
very important.
Show. It's super important. But you know, try to protect myself from this, and I think that's also something that artists these days, they forget that they have to protect what they're doing. They have to protect themselves from looking at half finished work and being like, or worse. That's great. Stop right there. Would you not finish with it?
That's a problem.
I showed Rasmus yesterday three works that I'm currently working on, and two I believe are done, but I'm not sure, and I told him that. But Rasmus is somebody, Rasmus Fischer, the creator of the show, guys from Wolfson, for people who don't know who it is. But we had the podcast with him a few weeks ago. And he's somebody who understands. And when we came to the third work, which I left wrapped, he said, oh, that's the third one. I said, it goes a little bit different direction. Can I see? I said, it's not finished. We unwrap it. He looks at it. Yeah, it's not finished. I'm not saying anything about that.
He said
something about the others, but I'm not saying anything about it. And I said, it's better he's not saying anything. What would that change? You know?
Yeah.
It could
yeah.
change things
yeah.
that in the end I hate about the work, you know, probably... Yeah. I don't know. It can destroy a work when you show too early. At least that's my my feeling. So I think it's very important to what you just said, you know, like the name of the artist is not in front of the painting. That's a very good, recommendation also to, to other artists that do not have a 40-year career, you know.
Do not stay in front of your painting because it's your painting we are looking at, not you. And that's really a problem for a lot of young artists. Mm-hmm. And the problem for that kind of career is that if you're a very known person, when you are getting a little bit older and not doing the same thing and maybe you're not famous anymore, you have the problem, where's your art? Mm-hmm. Because we have had in Denmark a little period with the rock musicians who had a little difficult selling the music, so they're starting making music, making art. And they get very good prices, and they owned a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that they are not real artists in that way, so when they have sold the person, mm-hmm. the institution of the rock musicians, and everybody had a painting of that, now it is zero. There's nothing left. Mm-hmm. Because there's no portfolio of art. There's just a famous artist who was making some art mm-hmm. works, and it sold, and it sold good. What are we now doing? Because if the rock musician is getting a little bit old and not making any music anymore, it's a problem for his art. Mm-hmm. Because the art is not built up in the right way. So he's 60 now, a lot of them.
Yeah.
We have 10, 20 in Denmark. They have had 10 years with, you know, in the career of an ending rock story. They make a lot of money on art. But now it stopped the whole thing, both the art and the rock musician,
the music.
And that's...
It's kind of sad.
Yeah, it's sad mm-hmm. in a way, but you cannot treat in that way. Of course you cannot be an extremely expensive artist in just one mm-hmm. second. Because you're a known person. And it's just for illustrate that the person...
The fact that if you have a name and you start painting, that your paintings will be picked up as well because you have that name. Yeah,
yeah.
I agree. That's that's probably helpful for sales.
Yeah, in a moment.
Yeah,
But it's not a career. It's not continuing. You need to be the little man behind the paintings. Mm-hmm. And if the people are looking for the artist, they can say, would you please come so I can have a picture of you?
But I think it's also very appealing these days for people to be artists and rock star.
Yeah.
You know, because artists these days are partly celebrated as rock stars. But I think it's still very, very rare that you have. I mean, you definitely have artists that are better in public than others, that work better, that, you know, function. But there's also many artists who just don't work, and you can't change that.
No.
You can't change it. You can't force people from the arts into those things. And that's good that they're not stereotypes. So I don't mind the musician starting to paint, but I'd appreciate it more if that was also always part of the work. I like, for example, the connection with music. I like it a lot. I think
I like it too. I have a guitar in my studio. I'm playing guitar, and I love music.
Something we have in common. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And still dreaming of my country record that I'm going to make when I'm 75, probably.
I am still dreaming of staying on a big huge stage and playing a very good guitar and see all the audience.
I'm gonna make that. I'm gonna do that.
I will make it too, I think.
Not on the stage. No.
So I had nothing against that mm-hmm. because it's very similar. I'm just talking about the problem that you are a famous person and because you are a famous person, mm-hmm. you are selling extremely a lot art mm-hmm. in few years, mm-hmm. and it's not part of your real life. It's just I know you, and therefore I like your paintings. Mm-hmm. It should be the other way around.
I agree.
And that's a part of being an artist. You are sitting in your studio. You are a lonesome person. Mm-hmm. And it takes a lot of years to make it. And
yeah,
as you say before, the dream of an artist would be to be picked up once a year. Mm-hmm. And the big gallery said, "How it's beautiful, everything." Yeah. And now we are making a big show. And could you please be there yourself? Yes, I can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be nice.
Yeah.
But that's, I think, really, really super rare. You know, if I look at, for example, famous artists these days, I don't really understand why they actually even have Facebook and Instagram. They shouldn't even, I mean, they don't have to have that.
No.
You know, I mean, I understand that many younger artists or mid-career artists, that they have to use that to be present and to stay in touch and in contact. And also, I think you're not necessarily selling directly through these platforms, but if your collectors are following it, they see new work, they see what's out there.
Yeah.
Ideally, you have somebody doing that for you.
Yeah. I am not on the social media. I'm totally old guys in that way.
Old fashioned.
And I'm continuing that. I really like not to be in that part of the real world.
As I said, I need this for
my personal
stuff. I'm trying to get, I'm doing less and less and less and less on there. Also, it's less and less and less visible because there's so many people out there and this. You know, sort of algorithms decide on what people should see and what they should
don't like it. I'm afraid of all that stuff. And in fact, I think it can make a bad thing for your concentration in the art way if you have too much communication around your art. The only communication, in fact, you need to have is when you have an exhibition and you show your work. There you can communicate with people and they can talk about your art, and you can, if they have answer, questions, you can answer them. But that's enough. Mm-hmm. Don't be a part of a big circle up there in the sky where you need to be on the whole time. I really don't think it's a good idea. The same for other type of art and writer. You cannot sit on an island concentrating on making a poesy and then following 1,000 people on your Facebook. It's not possible for me.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand, but that's also like an ideal situation where you just can afford to not. I mean, now it is like you can't afford to not do that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I see the pressure that many people have that they kind of have to be there, because you definitely will be overseen in some time, because also influences. I'm not the. I mean, like gallerists or art critics, they're also on online and they're checking and seeing a lot. So when I had the podcast with Rasmus, he said he's seeing a lot of art and picks up a lot of art through this. So if you're not part of this, how should he see you? But we met Rasmus and I, for example. Yeah. It's a nice thing. We met on an art fair.
Yeah.
And started to look at what the other person is doing on the next art fair, and started to look at artists and visit shows and exhibitions.
Yeah.
And then at one point we sat here and he saw my work here and he saw what we're doing. He said, "Listen, Jörg, should we do something together?" Yeah. That also took like a longer time, but not as long as I mentioned before. It's probably like a year after we've known each other. We said, "Okay, let's do something." 1.5 years later, one of my first works was shown at Wolfson. And that is actually, and he comes here and looks at my work, and that is basically a perfect scenario how you should work with people, try to get them. And a lot of people, like, I mean, don't have time to visit studios anymore, but they spend like 2-3 hours a day on the mobile phone on these communication channels.
They do.
And so this time could have been used differently. I agree when it's like abroad, far away and stuff like that, fine, cool, that, you know, it's better that we have the internet. But then it's still nicer to say, I call this person and we do FaceTime or Skype in the studio and look at those things.
But it's necessary. I have two boys in Copenhagen which are running restaurants.
All right.
It's impossible to run a restaurant without using the social media.
Yeah.
You agree, communicate yeah. with everybody.
Yeah.
Professional and your customers, your employees, everything mm-hmm. is in that way. Of course, I accept that, and I like it because it is really, really easy to do that. Mm-hmm. But what I'm talking about here is that the concentration and the quietness you need for making art, create art, is not going hand in hand with having a big social followers. Network, yeah, followers, and you, where you need to be a part of answering that the whole time. You need mm-hmm. to look at your phone constantly because something changed out there. And I think it's disturbing the situation in your studio.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So. You have something else that is, for some people, outdated and old-fashioned. You have a lot of books and catalogs.
Yeah.
And that's something that we at Helium Co. in the beginning did also a lot, books and catalogs. So how important are books still for you as an artist, especially when you're not using the other?
I think it's quite important. I still think it's a good idea to have a mm-hmm. book in your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, you can always find everything what I'm doing at the internet. These exhibitions here you can find at the yeah. internet, of course.
Sure.
But if you have a book like laying in the window there, you have something you get in your hand and you can bring it home and mm-hmm. you can, when you are, before you get into sleep, you can pick it up and read something or mm-hmm. look at something. I think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
I don't know if we are all getting into the social media to have everything there and not physical things, but I hope we still can make a book continuing my works I mean, after 5 years I need to make a book
yeah,
because then I need to pick them all up mm-hmm. and have a portfolio
I think it's important you have like a certain, you know, your work in one space, and if it's a physical space that you can just take everywhere and look at it and go back, it's
yeah.
much better. The other stuff is like it's too superficial when it's just a picture on the internet. I agree, it's all there, and I think documenting your work, everything is all fine, but also try to make, I think that's a good recommendation to every artist, basically make a book every once in a while. It doesn't have to be every year, it doesn't have to be for every show, you know, I'm planning to do a catalog for my next show, but because I'm currently in the struggle that I mentioned earlier that I don't necessarily find, I mean, not in this podcast, but before that I don't necessarily find the time to really work, and I moved my studio to the countryside to have the moment of silence and solitude for me there. I'm not even sure what's going to be in that book.
No.
It may not be for the opening of the exhibition, which as a gallerist, I totally M4, you know, it would be important to have that, but it may come out in March or April and I have no show at all.
Yeah.
But just do it.
Yeah.
You have to do it. And I agree that's something that I personally also like. I mean, it's also when artists come to me and present themselves to me and say, here, I leave this with you.
Yeah.
It's better than the poster, the postcard, the flyer, the card or the link here.
Yeah.
Here's my Instagram handle.
Yeah.
So yeah, books, I agree. Books are important.
I hope it's continuing.
Yeah. So tonight we're opening your exhibition Face of Fate. I'm looking forward to that. It's going to be different again because we did one exhibition together with Gallery Wolfson and we have a totally different mix of people then. Danish people like to come to Hamburg, visit the city, and there's also a large Danish community in Hamburg. We also have tonight this shared openings with all the galleries in Neustadt in our area here, which is also for the first time. So I'm really looking forward to that. I'm glad you could make it and we could make it to this podcast.
I'm looking forward and I'm very glad to be here.
Yeah.
I like Hamburg and
here quite often, quite frequently as well.
Yeah, right? Yeah. In fact, we are more often in Hamburg than in Copenhagen.
Yeah, okay.
So it's very, very nice to have a show here. And
It's like a four-hour drive from Aarhus, right?
Yeah.
Depending on the traffic.
Because of the traffic, it's a little bit more. But,
but
normally,
when
we have a free road down here, we can do it in 3 hours. So
that's probably going to change in a few years.
Yeah.
All right. Peter, thank you. Anything that I've left out? Anything you'd like?
No, I think we've been around everything so much as we can.
Let's hope that Melvin took some nice pictures of us while we're sitting.
I hope so too.
So if it, you know, sort of like,
yeah,
if people are concerned about the clicking in the background, or the delivery people also coming today. Yeah. We had a couple of deliveries while we did the podcast. It's not the perfect studio scenario here, but it's, I think, already.
It's good. I like it. I like it.
Yeah. All right. Good. Perfect. Thank you, Peter.
Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Helium Talk.
Helium Talk.